Hello, this is Mary Lucille Hayes, and I thought I would read you a couple of my poems and a short story. These were published in Coal City Review, number 43, November 2019. Tippett Hill. We pull out of the filling station and head for the interstate. Aunt Jane looks at me cockeyed. Why do you want to know where Tippett Hill is? I stammer at the unexpected question. Grandma, she sometimes told about it. I feel strangely defensive. Why am I so interested in my father's people? Blind fingers like the roots of lilies probing deeper into the generations, sifting through the layers of the ages, reaching back and back and back. She drives in silence, and I am afraid she has forgotten. Have we passed it yet? No. The word is drawn from the side of her mouth. Then I see we are coming up on a ridge. The highway cuts into it, and a house sits near the top. There it is, she points. Used to be the highest spot in central Illinois, maybe in the state. See those silos there? That's where the Heath settled. Some years back, they chopped off the top of it for the TV tower. They took another chunk when the highway came through. Used to be three times as high as it is now. She drives on, and our talk turns to the weather and the roadside weeds. A neighbor passes us and waves. It is Les Alexander, her brother's father-in-law. Grandma used to tell how Anna Porter Heath climbed that hill every morning to look eastward for her David, waiting for his return. She climbed Tippett Hill for 40 years after they brought her the news of his death in Ohio. They said his last words were of her. Anna's waiting in the sunrise, and she was. I am stunned at such faith. The 40-year faith of long-ago lovers, my grandmother's faith in the old story. As we round the bend, I catch a last sight of the hill in the side mirror. I try to measure where the top would have been, and I am struck with the thought that Aunt Jane was here before the highway, before the TV tower. She must remember Tippett Hill before, when it stood like a dinosaur on the outwash plain. Maybe she stood at the top once, struggling to hold her own against the high prairie winds. She shakes her head, and I lean forward to catch her words. Used to be three times as high. And I wonder where I will go to meet my dead. The next poem is called Dylan at the Beat Museum, and I thought I would introduce it telling about how I came to write it. We were visiting a friend in Iowa City, and I found myself at the Prairie Lights bookstore, which is an amazing independent bookstore. And Dylan, our middle son, happened to be visiting San Francisco at the same time. And I was suddenly seized with the idea that maybe he and I would be in these bookstores at the same time. So I pulled out my phone, and this was in the days of flip phones, and I texted him. And this was when you would hit the number two or three times to get the letter that you want. So it was a long, tedious text. And I asked him, Dylan, are you in the City Lights bookstore in San Francisco? And I told him I was in the Prairie Lights bookstore, and he said, no, I tried to go to the Beat Museum, but it was too expensive. So I immediately just typed out this poem, pecked it out on my little phone, and although I did tweak it afterwards, it came out pretty much like this. So here we go. Dylan at the Beat Museum. I went to the Beat Museum, but they wanted $8. $8 of my hard-earned money. $8 of my cracking eggs for the people on the sidewalk, $8 of slicing peppers and peeling onions in the kitchen inside a truck. $8 of my eyes weeping as I slice. $8, man. For $8, I could buy a typewriter ribbon or a roll of paper to unroll my blood, sweat, and tears down Woody Guthrie's ribbon of highway in this my land of earth, wind, and fire all the way home. I stand with my hand out on the sidewalk, not asking for eggs or egg money or pin numbers, not asking for a lower tax rate or higher fences, or to sanctify gay marriage or to marry a sanctimonious bastard. Just asking for $8. Just asking to see some beets. I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for the Beet Museum today. Can I borrow $8, man? And this story is called The Sanctity of Snow. Heidi wanted something for Kyle to unwrap on graduation day. The empty nest had been looming for a while, and now here it was. Well, almost. She still had the summer with him before he went all the way to San Diego State University, but his commencement was in a few days, and that made it seem like it was upon her. The seniors already had their last day of school. Kyle still had the one final to take tomorrow, but he assured her he would pass. It's cake, Mom. It was calculus, which didn't sound like cake to her, but she took him at his word and didn't worry that he didn't seem to be studying. She had been preparing for Kyle's departure in small ways for a while. For the last few years, when he went to band camp or on the class trip, she would walk around her suddenly quiet house and tell herself, this is how it will be. She liked being alone. Sometimes even craved solitude. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that she loved being a mother, and now that she felt she was finally getting good at it, that role had turned into a part-time job, and now she would retire. She had her music, of course, and her work as the record secretary for the Music Teachers Association and her students, so she would keep busy. But at home, it had been the two of them facing the world together for so many years, and now his path would branch off from hers. That's how it works, she told herself. Nothing to whine about, and she pushed into the store. The air conditioning hit her like something solid after the heat of the parking lot. Heidi was in town buying stuff for his celebration. She made arrangements for a party tray from the sandwich shop, bought bags of chips and jars of salsa, ordered a cake from the grocery store. The little pickup truck she had already given him for his birthday a few weeks ago was really quite enough of a present. It took her 6 months to put aside money for it, and he understood it was for his graduation, too. He was over the moon, even though it was just a used Chevy S10, the smallest truck she could find. But now she wanted one more little gift. That's why she was in the camping store. Kyle had planned a camping trip this summer with his best friend Jimmy, and so she was searching for something for the trip. The gear was all either too expensive or too gadgety. She was about to go when she saw the nylon kite in day glow colors hanging from the ceiling. It had a hand-lettered sign taped to it saying there was 20% off, marked down from $60. It was like a box kite, but with lots of extra panels so that it looked like a geometry problem. Each plane was a different bright color, and it was so small, just slightly bigger than a bread box, that she thought it was a miniature, a sample of a real kite. Does this thing really fly? Heidi pointed toward the kite. The girl at the counter cut her eyes to the ceiling. Yes, I think it so. I think it should. I'll take one then. Heidi set her purse on the counter and opened it. Does it come in a box? The girl seemed unsure. I'll have to check. We don't sell a lot of those. She picked up a phone and called to the back. While she explained to someone about the kite, Heidi amused herself by examining the pocket knives displayed under the glass countertop. A moment later, a man about Heidi's age hurried out from the back of the store. I'm sorry, Those two hanging from the ceiling are actually the only ones we have left. He was already climbing up on a chair to take it down. Is this the one you want? He held it out toward her. Now she could see a thin layer of dust on its surface. Oh, I don't know. Heidi wasn't sure anymore. It seems a little faded. But it is a very cool kite. Heidi flashed on the memory of Kyle and Jimmy flying paper kites in the grass waterway all summer before sixth grade. They had run a complicated experiment collecting data and everything on whether a diamond kite or a delta kite was easier to launch, on what kind of tail would carry their kites higher. Kyle would love it. He could fly it on the beach. Heidi had just decided to buy the kite after all when the store manager spoke again. How about I give it to you for 50% off? Heidi smiled. It already says 20%. 50% on top of that. Alrighty then, sold. He handed her the kite as he stepped off the chair, and she began blowing dust off the surfaces while the girl rang her up, and it did look more colorful now. This comes with it. The man was holding a wooden reel of kite string, like a giant spool of thread with a large dowel rod running through it. You could hold on to the dowel as the string let itself out. It was polished and weighty and impressive. Heidi felt like she had made a very good deal. She thanked him and left the store. Outside, she opened her trunk just as her phone rang. She tossed the kite in on top of the county market bag of party supplies. She fumbled in her purse for the phone and glanced at the number just as she was slamming the trunk. Nobody from her contacts, but it had a local prefix, probably someone asking about the party. She flipped the phone open. Hello? She asked, glancing up at the clear blue sky. It was the county sheriff, and the bottom dropped out of her world. Heidi didn't remember driving to the trauma center, but found herself at the desk. As soon as she told them who she was, they called security to escort her right upstairs to a private surgical conference room. She sat down and then stood up again, and a moment later, a dapper but efficient man came in and solemnly shook her hand. He told her he was the hospital chaplain. He led her to a beige love seat and sat down next to her. She couldn't comprehend his words, but he seemed so kind. He was small and round. He was bald with a fringe of white hair, just like her grandpa had, and serious eyes and glasses and a little goatee. His voice was calming. She had the feeling he was repeating himself, but she couldn't concentrate. A rushing noise filled her ears, and then some words would break through. The very best surgical team. No more in a few hours. Call anyone? She realized he was looking at her expectantly. What? Heidi glanced around the room, fighting panic. Can I call anyone for you? Family, your pastor. We'll need to notify Kyle's father. My sister. When Rita answered, Heidi told her she was at the hospital and then couldn't get any more words out. The chaplain took the phone and she laid her head back on the love seat. She closed her eyes and listened to his calm explanation. Kyle had been in a bad accident. He was in surgery now. They were doing everything they could to help him. Her sister probably needs her right now. Could she come right away? No, we don't know too much about his condition yet, just that it is very serious. Well, yes, critical. He is in critical condition. But when Rita got to the hospital, it was too late for her to do anything but hold her sister as they sobbed together and then help with the arrangements. There were so many things to settle, so many people to call. The graduation party transformed into a celebration of life. Instead of groups of happy graduates gathering in the house and yard to joke, plan, and reminisce, they filed in silently with their cards and their flowers. Most of the girls and a few of the boys hugged her, some sobbing so hard that she found herself comforting them. Jimmy, though, was stoic. Heidi put her hands on his shoulders, though he was a head taller than she was, just a shade taller than Kyle. You'll go on and do wonderful things. It took immense effort for her to say this, and she watched his face for a long moment. He nodded miserably and gave her a quick squeeze, then ducked out into the yard to wait for the friends he had come with. Heidi went to the kitchen to pour herself a glass of water. Rita was there, washing plates and setting out more food. There were 3 cartons of potato salad on the counter and 2 of coleslaw. "Honey, you want me to fix you a plate?" Rita opened the drawer and pulled out a serving spoon and plunged it into a casserole. "You need to eat." But Heidi shook her head and glanced out the window where Jimmy stood hunched down, hands in his pockets, kicking at the gravel in the drive. Then he suddenly stood up straight as if he heard something on the wind. He was gazing out across the cornfield into the grass waterway, but another of Kyle's classmates came in to give her a hug, so she turned away from the window before she could see what he saw. Rita said that they would make a special announcement at the graduation, but Heidi couldn't make herself go. She could imagine it more fully than she wanted to. They would have had a moment of silence that crackled with sniffling and murmur of escaped sobs. They wanted to present her with Kyle's diploma, even though he never took that last calculus final, but she asked Jimmy to accept it in her place. Someone put together a short slideshow. The principal and his wife brought her the DVD afterwards. She watched it once, but it was almost unbearable. It had Ken Burns-style slow pan and zoom close-ups, and Kyle stood in his band uniform, holding his mellophone, his lovely face smiling, coming closer and closer to her, only to fade out, dissolving into the next photo. Now he was grimacing as he passed an opponent in a cross-country race. Fade. Now at his 5th-grade field trip to the fire department. Fade. Now holding his prize-winning bantam under one arm and hugging his 4-H trophy with the other. Fade. It felt like he was being snatched away from her over and over and over again. At first, people called, brought her casseroles, kept in touch. But soon that dropped off, and who could blame them? She wasn't exactly encouraging visits. Rita was running interference for her, and Heidi felt like she was in a fog. She rarely answered her phone anymore. The parts of her job she used to love, the teaching, watching young fingers stretch to strike a chord on the piano, noting the difference practice made week by week, helping students prepare for the testing and recitals. She now just tried to wade through, ticking off the minutes until the lesson was finished and she could be alone again. She still said the same encouraging words, but felt that the children knew she was faking it. The less engaging parts of her job, mailing the curriculum, the award pins, the plaques to music teachers across the state, used to feel like a welcome exercise in efficiency. Now it felt deadly, and she found herself making idiotic mistakes. Once she got a call from a teacher up in the suburbs, a woman she had been friendly with at the annual convention, but on that day her tone was impatient. She told Heidi she had ordered the new curriculum, but received an envelope with a phone book instead. At first, Heidi misunderstood. "You mean I sent you the directory of teachers instead of the curriculum?" "No, a phone book, a Yellow Pages phone book." Heidi could do nothing but repeat her words. "A Yellow Pages phone book," she said, as if it made sense. "But why? Why would you send me a Yellow Pages phone book?" But Heidi had no answer. She had no memory of putting the heavy phone book into the manila envelope, sticking the address label on it, and taking it to the post office, though she must have done it. She was the only one who worked in the office, the only paid worker on a volunteer board. "I don't know." Now, 6 months later, the snow was furiously driving itself into her windshield, or she was driving furiously into the snow. The headlights illuminated the flakes, and they seemed to be coming out of nowhere, heading straight for her. Her windshield wipers were at the top speed and going so fast it seemed they would fly off into the night. Sometimes the flakes would eddy a bit before splattering onto her windshield to get knocked off by the wiper blades. Sometimes they would come straight on out of the blackness. Either way, she could barely see the road. It was late, and there was very little traffic, which was a blessing. In weather like this, you don't want to add the sudden glare of oncoming headlights to the mix of icy roads and zero visibility. She was going faster than she should, driving mindlessly, and she came to as her car hit a lump or a ditch and started to go into a swerve. She pulled the steering wheel to the left and felt the car correct itself. Heidi let out her breath that she didn't realize she was holding and pulled her foot from the accelerator. She glanced at the speedometer and saw she was coming down from almost 70 miles per hour. Too fast, she thought dully, then looked back ahead and saw the deer bounding across the road 50 feet in front of her. She nicked the brake and glanced to the right shoulder where it came from. Deer were never alone, and sure enough, a couple more emerged from the blowing snow, and who knows how many behind them, hidden by the blizzard and darkness. The storm had come up fast, catching her and the deer both. She brought the car to a careful stop and watched the herd cross. It was a large one, and they each followed after and after. She was on her way home and wasn't even sure why she was hurrying. That's what she did now, hurried away or toward things, trying not to be still. Now, with the car stopped and the snow blowing over the hood from the same direction the deer had come, she was struck with the peaceful scene. She sat quietly in the car for a long moment after the deer passed. With the car still, the snow seemed to fall more gently. The windshield wipers began to make a scraping noise, and she turned them off. She sat for a moment, watching the snow in her headlights. It was hypnotic. In the sudden stillness, she thought of Kyle, and her heart stopped, and her throat swelled up just as it had 6 months ago when she got the call. She gripped the steering wheel at the top and rested her head on her hands for 1 minute. 2 minutes. She turned off the car. She began to think of him as she did every time she was still, but his memory didn't comfort her. Instead, it was a torment. He deserved so much more than she had given him in his short life, and now she could only think of all the ways she failed him. When he was two, his father brought him a present. It was a big, vulgar, plastic ride-on car. She tried to be gracious, but it was cheaply made. It had a face, eyes for headlights made of stickers, and one of the stickers was already peeling off. "Thanks, Joe," she said. She knew they wouldn't see Kyle's dad again for months, and she was already planning to take an ad out to sell the thing, even as she stood in the foyer nodding. Joe was explaining how he would get caught up on the child support. "Bye-bye, buddy." Joe ruffled Kyle's hair, but Kyle was already climbing on the car and hitting the little plastic horn. It made a wheezing sound. A few days later, Heidi did sell it. She glued the sticker on tightly, and a woman came to the door. She needed ride-on toys, she said, for her daycare. She was very happy to get it and handed Heidi $15 cash. But when the woman picked it up from the living room floor and turned to go, Kyle ran after her, wailing. Heidi caught him by the shoulders, and the woman went out. When he saw the door close, he fell to his knees and threw his head back in a full-blown tantrum. Now, here in her car in the snow, all Heidi could see was his little red face as he wailed, "Stupid, stupid!" She pushed her forehead against the steering wheel. She sold it because it was plastic and ugly, and probably because she was angry with Joe, without even thinking about Kyle. His tantrum had caught her by surprise, even though it shouldn't have. Heidi could have kept the stupid car, told the woman, "Sorry, never mind, I don't want to sell it after all." But instead, she pocketed the money and tried to calm her son. Now, Heidi sat in the dark car, maybe about 3 miles from her little farmhouse, on one of the gridline roads that crisscrosses the prairie farmland, defining sections and townships. She was headed home after a few days for the music teacher's annual convention. Heidi used to enjoy this yearly meeting. It was a lot of work, but she could see friends from all over the state. Only this year, she didn't want to go. She got through it, numbly accepting hugs and condolences from well-meaning acquaintances and friends. Now she was coming home late at night, the roads dark and empty. Heidi suddenly thought of Kyle's troll doll with a shock of green hair. He carried that thing everywhere and petted it and called it Trolley. He was 7, and they were driving up to the city to visit her mom. About 20 minutes away from home, he suddenly let out a wail from the back seat. Trolley! I left him at home! Heidi sighed. He'll be fine. No, I want him. I need him. The only things you need, her voice was terse, are food, clothing, and shelter. And you have all those, plus a whole lot more. Oh, why had she been so cold? She would give anything now to turn that car around. Kyle started sobbing wildly, and her hands tightened on the wheel. We've gone too far to turn now, she said. He wailed louder, and she drove on. Another 5 miles down the road, and he was still crying. A rest stop! He screamed. Turn around! You can't turn around at a rest stop. You just rest. He started chanting. My trolley, I love him. Where are you, my trolley? My trolley, I love him. Where are you, my trolley? Her heart began to break, and tears stung her eyes, but she kept driving, wondering if she were doing the right thing. Of course she was doing the right thing. He needed to learn to deal with stuff. But what would it hurt to turn around? By now, they'd lose an hour and a couple of gallons of gas. But mostly, she didn't want to spoil him. She drove on. He stopped chanting for a moment. Oh, Mommy, will I ever be happy again? Now, in the winter night, Heidi began to cry. Why were all of her memories of the many ways she had failed him? She was getting cold in the car with the motor turned off and the heat fading. She rummaged in the console for the tissue and blew her nose. She sighed and turned the key in the engine, but it made a grinding sound. How long had she been sitting here? She had left the lights on, and they were glowing weakly. She turned them off. The snow built up on her windshield. Looking ahead, she felt like she was in a white cocoon. Just then, the full moon, which had been hidden behind the heavy snow clouds, escaped. She couldn't see it, only the sudden light glowing from above down onto the snow-covered car. For a moment, Heidi didn't know what to do. She grabbed her cell phone and found Siebens Towing Company in her contacts. Mrs. Siebens answered and told her that Dennis was out in his tow truck. It would be a few hours at least before he could get to her. What was her location? Heidi suddenly realized she didn't know exactly where she was. She was only a few miles from home, but couldn't remember now whether they'd passed the cemetery yet. She'd been driving on autopilot. Plus, the roads out here didn't have names, just numbers. Her route home had always been poetic. Take Old Church Lane out of town till you hit the tree in the middle of the road and turn left. Turn right at the cow pasture with the winding stream. Past the cemetery, and you'll soon arrive at the corner where you could see the house. She tried to think backwards. If her own road was 1900 north, then the road past the cemetery would be an east road, but what number? 1200? 1400? She opened the car door and got out. The wind had picked up again, and the moon was still bright in front of her, but was it rising or setting? The snow was heavier than before, and she could only see frozen fields about 30 yards in any direction. She knew the roads here were cut in a mile-by-mile grid, but she couldn't even see which was the nearest corner where she could find the numbers on the road sign. I'll call you again, she told Mrs. Siebens, when I figure out where I am. For the first time, she wished she had brought herself a smartphone with a GPS. Kyle had one, after convincing her he was the last kid in school without one, after swearing he would never look at it while he was driving. But it was lost in the crash. She walked around to the back of the car. Kyle had made a winter emergency kit in 4-H, and it must still be there. She hadn't even opened the trunk for a long while. Her grocery shopping was now so small she just set the few bags on the passenger seat. Kyle's kit was a tub with a candle and matches, a flashlight, candy bars, water bottles, kitty litter, and a blanket. He told her how burning a candle can keep you warm until help arrives if you crack the window so that you don't use up all the oxygen. She opened the trunk. The trunk light was very weak, but let her see a little more. And there, on top of the abandoned bags of chips and salsa, was the kite. She reached out and touched it. She had forgotten all about his present. He would have loved it. She was certain of that. She picked it up and held it out. Where was the spool of string? She rummaged around and found it. It had a little clip, and she snapped it onto the kite. Heidi shut the trunk and took a few steps down the road. The moon still shone, reflecting off the snow, but the brightness stopped in the swirling snowflakes. She hesitated just a moment, and then threw the kite into the wind. It rose and quickly was obscured by the blizzard. The spool in her hands began to turn faster and faster. She could no longer see the kite, but could feel it tugging on the string. The wind picked up and the spool spun faster. She thought again of Kyle. He was in middle school or maybe early high school. He was one of the handful of kids who wore those big skater pants that looked more like a floor-length welding apron. He insisted on them, although his entire school clothes budget went to buy one pair of pants. The fad only lasted a few years, thank God. Once Heidi and Kyle were sitting in the brown bag, eating pie. They were talking about album covers and laughing. Kyle said that if he ever made an album, he would have all of his friends out to the house and chase the chickens around the yard. Pictures of that would be really funny, he thought. "Here's my album cover," said Heidi. She paused for a moment as she visualized it. "You know the old jailhouse?" Of course he did. It was built back in the Civil War, a landmark of their town just off the courthouse square, a block from where they were sitting now. It was a brick, house-shaped building, painted an improbable baby blue. It had bars on the window like a cartoon jailhouse. "You know that sign under the window?" Kyle nodded. It was hand-lettered in cursive and centered in a white rectangle painted right on the brick. It said, "Do not pass anything through the bars to the prisoners." "Okay." Heidi cut another bite of pie with her fork and held it up. "I want to take a picture of you pretending to pass a note through the bars." As she ate her bite of pie, she could suddenly see the whole scene laid out. Kyle with his back to the camera and his big skater pants, his long red hair hanging in unkempt curls. He looks both ways, checking to see if he's being watched. Then he reaches on tiptoe to pass his note through the bars to a waiting hand. "Maybe we should make it a video." Heidi cut another bite of pie. "Your music video." Kyle began laughing as she explained. "No, wait," he snorted. "I'm passing a pie, a whole effing pie." They ate their own pie through fits of laughter, and when they finally finished, she knitted while Kyle did his homework. Heidi hadn't thought about that day for a long time. She never did take that picture, and a year later, they tore down the old jailhouse and built a new one on the edge of town. Now, in the dark snowstorm, Heidi noticed that her hands were cold. She should get back in the car or walk down to the corner to see what road she was on. But the spool kept spinning and the kite kept tugging at her, going higher and higher. Tears were streaming down her face, and Heidi wondered what it would be like to die out here in this weather. A hell of a lot better than dying in a stupid car crash, she thought. Now it was dark, and suddenly Heidi remembered that green-haired troll again. He was always haunting her. She had been over that day so often, she wished she could just forget it. The movie in her mind spooled on. She heard Kyle's whining, his moaning, his chanting again, felt the tears burning in the back of her throat as she just kept driving. But this time, the movie kept playing and she remembered what happened next. He sobbed for a while and then he got quiet in the back and she thought he had cried himself to sleep. Heidi drove until she came to the next rest stop. She parked the car and turned around to check on him. There he was, sitting up, watching meditatively out the window. "You know what?" Kyle spoke slowly with wonder. "I'm not sad anymore. I thought I couldn't go to Grandma's without Trolley, but I can. I'll just see him when I get back. Heidi had forgotten all about that part, his matter-of-fact acceptance. But here it was. She stared up into this dark sky where the string of the kite disappeared. The snow was falling faster, and the wind picked up even more. The kite pulled and pulled. The spool suddenly stopped spinning with a chunk. The string tightened and began to make a hum as the wind blew over it. The kite gave one final pull, and the string snapped somewhere up in the snow. Heidi's end of the string fell suddenly down, whipping in the wind. "Goodbye," she called. Heidi was crying and her throat burned, but still she shouted and shouted over the wind. "Goodbye, my beloved. I'll see you when I get there. Goodbye. I love you. Goodbye." And she turned around and went back to her car to find her gloves. Heidi still couldn't see much, but she would choose a direction and walk until she found a corner to get her bearings. I want to thank Brian Daldorf, the editor of the Coal City Review, for printing my poems and my story. And also, I want to thank Brian for nominating that story for an O. Henry Award. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.